Welcome back to the Explicit Measures Podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Sorry, I had to rearrange the images there. Everyone's shifting around.
Happy Tuesday.
There it is.
Oh, that's rough on the ears.
It would have been shorter, but Mike kept interrupting it, so I couldn't, you know, like that's just not allowed.
Stop halfway through.
Yeah. Starts up.
Main topic for today is we're going to be talking about the AI and data culture problems. There's an article that has been written by Forbes. The title of the article is Why AI Isn't Going to Solve All Your Data Culture Problems, which seems right. Yeah, agree. But AI is helping out with things. So where is the right place to apply it? So that'll be our main topic for today. But before we do that, there's a couple, let's call it news articles. Let's do the news. Tommy, anything else that came out on the Microsoft blog or Fabric blog that is worthy of talking about?
Oh, maybe game changing. Well, I don't know, but big actually update for Fabric and updating and uploading your CSV and Excel files. There's a new data connector that actually allows you to do direct import of your Excel and CSV files directly from OneDrive, so you have a direct connection. Okay. Star schema detection and relationship detection, which is very interesting, especially when it's being loaded into your report. It looks for any existing relationships between what's in Excel and CSV and applies that behind in your Power BI report.
I'm going to have to play with this. So interesting that they're having some smart schema detection. And also looking for interesting, I mean, they already have relationship detecting for Power BI Desktop. Like when you bring in a new table, it'll try and find names of columns that match and detect relationships there. So I usually don't let that happen inside Power BI Desktop, but I see that they're kind of mirroring the same features from Desktop. Where's the feature for don't let users put in bad data into columns that are not the right column? Like, where's that? So I like Excel files. I like pulling data. And I think a lot of the newer users to Power BI starts with flat file dumps and starts loading data in through files. But I very quickly feel like we get into a problem where the Excel files change, the Power BI report breaks, and we have all this inconsistency and a lot of extra rework around trying to make and harden the process on how Excel gives data back to Power BI. I don't see anything in this article talking about like the hardening aspect of, oh, by the way, we will check your Excel file and make sure none of the columns change from when you loaded it last so it doesn't break your entire process. So that's the kind of feature I would like to see in this.
It's a bit disruptive too. Go ahead.
That's quite a feature ask when realistically all we're doing is enhancing the report creation experience in the service. Isn't that what this is? It's basically just enabling things you can do in the desktop now in the service.
You mean one of our most popular articles from Power BI Tips blog how to load files from SharePoint. Yeah. It is like literally still number one for like forever. Years.
Since it was written.
It was written. It has been since day one. Because you work with an Excel file or a flat file on your computer and you're like, well, now what? Where do I put it now? And where I need to go pick it up. And there's this whole concept of every time I do a training session, it's like, okay, today our example is we're pulling data from the local machine. What we should really be doing is putting these in SharePoint or a place where they're accessible to PowerBI.com, and then you can use them. And everyone's like, what? I'm like, okay.
So it's a bit disruptive too, because this is all great for Power BI, but then Fabric's coming out with articles and they're pushing the OneLake File Explorer to push your files into OneLake. And these are not interconnected, right, at all.
This is where, guess what? There are multiple teams working on this.
Yeah.
You have a single product.
You give me your file.
Right. We already uploaded the file.
These are just options, guys. You can do it over here or you can do it over there.
It's true.
Except it's not the same route, though, because this doesn't get added to OneLake at all. This is just a single report.
It just gets pulled into a Power BI report.
You have to do that. You have to have some capability to do. I mean, I would like it to have all three options like out of the gate, right? It should say OneDrive, SharePoint, and then it should be. They're saying OneDrive.
Everything's on OneLake already, isn't it?
Not this.
Well, and They should have another option that says just get it from one leg, right? I mean, that would make sense. It's just the third option there. Anyways, I'll have to play around with this one a bit. Interesting build here. I'm not sure how I understand the star schema detection.
Smart schema?
Yeah. I that is interesting to me. So I wonder if that is, if it looks at if you had dimension tables and factual things inside your Excel file, which I'm not sure anyone's really not doing that anyways.
Are you reading that like it's in the model already? I think that reads to me just like a data validator in the front.
It says our connector automatically detects the schema of your Excel and CSV files,
including data types and structure. To me, that's just a file, the CSV file.
Oh, so it's not actually star schema. I mean, it's not saying, hey, I found a dimension in your report that looks like this.
I don't think so.
The description seemed a little misleading then.
The more I'm going through this, I'm realizing the persona here they're going after is not you or myself.
Yes. This would be the data scientist and persona. No. That was a joke, Tommy. That was a joke.
Okay, I was about to say.
Smart schema detection just reads like the error detection that we already have.
Yeah.
Like it's showing you the distribution of things that don't align to your data type, which is valuable. Right up front, it is.
I would agree.
It has got to be clean.
The title in my mind makes different sense to what they described there.
Question, do you guys turn on or off the auto detect relationships in Power BI?
Auto detect relationships? Always off.
Yeah, always off. Yeah. And
always off for me.
All my training too. But I think that's because our personas. If you're a consumer or self-service, you don't know what you're doing. You're going to go great. And so this is where I think this is more consumer facing.
I disagree. I think there's two features that are always should be off. And again, Microsoft, I think, is trying to make it easier for new users. In reality, what really happens is it actually complicates things more and people get confused as to why did that thing automatically show up? And again, from a sales perspective, it looks great. Like, hey, it's going to auto detect a relationship. It knows there's two columns. It sees the data inside the columns. It says, oh, I'm going to make a best guess that these should be related. Okay. Seems like a very valid assumption. When models get more complex though, other than like three tables or more, I feel like that kind of somewhat falls apart.
I mean, it falls apart instantly when you import three different data sets and all of them have an ID column, but that's not what you want to join them on.
Yeah, it's just ID.
Right?
That's true.
And I think valid up front maybe to show folks how things relate and what you have to build. Yeah. It quickly evolves into you making changes to a report. And it automatically changes something behind the scenes that you didn't expect it to. Because that happens a lot.
Yeah. That
causes more wasted time than anything. Because why is this not working? Mm-hmm. Especially when it's in DAX calculations or things like that.
Oh my gosh.
All right, here's your million dollar idea on this one, Seth. Just based on your idea there. They should have, instead of it auto detecting the relationships, it should walk you through we found three columns that may be related. Here's the relationship view. We pre-selected these columns.
Schema.
Yeah, here's the
schema. What I want to change.
Correct.
Yes or no?
Yes. Here is the things that I'm selecting for you. We recommend this is the thing. Does this make sense to you? Yes or no? Approve. I'm cool with just approve on the data load.
We're going to change your relationships.
Like that.
Do you approve?
Schema green, red. Do you want to change?
Yes,
no. Or skip. Yeah. No. And then you can, guess what? Then you can track how useful that is.
Ooh.
Right? Then people are like, yes or no, yes or no, right?
It's data back to the AI to train itself.
There you go. There you go.
More things for Copilot to consume.
Just show me. Show me what you want to change before.
We've actually haven't been doing this podcast for the last 100 episodes. This is actually all AI generated. This is actually Copilot. We said, act like you're an Italian from New York that moved to Florida and loves Power BI.
moved to Chicago. And he has no idea what his identity. Yeah, no.
I love Power BI guys' comment here. Auto detect relationships is the slightly less evil twin of auto date time.
That's the other one I was going to go after. So that was my next gripe was the always turn off auto date time. And yes, I understand it does help.
Does it though?
It does help for new users. I definitely think it definitely helps.
Make it start of month.
For sure.
Very quickly do you outgrow that date table. And there are other questions that come out that are like, well, we should probably have an index column for year, month, and day. And we should have, to your point, start of month columns and all these other things. Again, going back to like, wouldn't it be nice if there was like an auto setup screen for this? Hey, we're going to give you an auto date time calendar on these date tables or these date columns. Which ones do you choose? Like, let me pick which ones I want. Hey, by the way, we already know how to do all these other things related. Like, dates are very well known. Hey, how about you just tell us, do you want holidays included? Do you want like this thing included? Do you want start of month? Like, you should just literally have a list of things that like tick, 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 tick. You just check them off and boom, uploads the one table on the one date thing that you need or multiples, right? There it is. Now it's all consistent.
I agree. And when you're having that conversation in every one of those questions right beforehand, emphasize it with, hey, do you want, hey.
Hey.
I think that just reinforces the point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and that's a Mike DiCarloism.
Hey is for horses.
No, I think instead of the Clipper, we need Navi. So going back to a little Zelda conversation. Oh my God.
Yeah, exactly.
I would love that in Power BI.
We need Clippy for Power BI.
Navi.
Which has been renamed Copilot.
It's the fairy from Zelda.
Oh my God.
The one that would prompt you every time you tried to walk. Right. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Sorry, am I being too nerding out here?
No, the newer ones.
We're on the new Tears of the Kingdom kind of Zelda.
Yeah. Breath of the Wild, Tears.
Breath of the Wild, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I need to catch up. Navi?
Well, I don't think so.
Now you have the this. Never mind. We're not going to devolve.
We're not going to divulge in that. Tommy, when your kids are old enough to get a Nintendo Switch, you too will learn about all the things.
Yes.
Yeah. So, two games you're going to love, or I think your family will enjoy, will be like the Minecraft and will be the Zelda franchise. So those are two really solid good ones. We had just as a side family note, we had a whole family except my wife, because she doesn't play Minecraft, but everyone else loved playing Minecraft. And everyone had their own screen and we were all playing Minecraft together. And everyone's like, this is great. You know, we're all sharing diamonds back and forth. And it was wonderful. It was a good time.
We did get a Switch, so I'll have to introduce that. Quick shout out to my two daughters. Right. We'll keep going.
Yeah.
They saved their money on their own. They said, how much is a Switch? And we're like, well, these are for Christmas.
Way more than you have.
Exactly. Yeah. But like, hey, if we put our money together from Christmas, could we get one? And I was like, yeah.
Oh.
And I was like, okay, but that means no, this and this and this. They said, that's fine. We'll put our money together. So shout out to planning ahead, which I was definitely not doing at 7 years old.
So right. Teach them well, Tommy. Teach them. That's it. Teach them like you got to make decisions. You got to choose one or the other. Pick what you want. That's really good. Our kids did a very similar purchase. They saved up for something. And I'm like, okay, well, you saved up for it. I told you what the number was. You did it. You did the work. All right. Well, go get you the thing. Excellent. That's really good news. Way to go. Parenting win for Tommy. Cha-ching. All right, let's move on to our main topic today, because everyone's loving to talk about our personal lives all the time. So we'll jump into our main topic today. So today the article is why AI is not going to solve our data culture problems. I'll go snag the link here for everyone to go follow along as well, if you'd like to check out this link and read along with us as well. Go grab the link here from Forbes and I'll put it in the window. Tommy, give us a little overview of this article and where are we starting for the conversation for?
So Forbes survey, it's actually Brent Dykes who does Effective Data Storytelling, that book and the article.
We've done a bunch of articles from him.
Yeah. And it starts with this data executive culture survey that was conducted. And from 2023 to 2024, the number of companies that reported they had a data-driven organization rose from 23% in 23 to 48% in 24. And the number from data analysis culture from 20% in 23 to 42%. So large shifts just in the last 12 months on what they're seeing on organizations reporting data culture. The people who conducted the survey said, well, what could this be? And they said, it's the confidence in the generative AI. Now, Brent Dykes is actually saying, is that the actual answer here? That was a speculation on what was the cause of a giant spike in these numbers. And basically, Brent Dykes is going through thinking you're a data-driven organization, what AI can do to help you think that, but actually being a data-driven organization, and really what are the effects and the outcomes of that.
There's a lot of things going on here.
Yeah.
And this is, and I've said it before, and maybe this is part of what I feel like is going to be happening, right? With the advent of AI, you have more need to know where truth is. What is that truth thing? Because the AI is going to be able to produce whatever it thinks it needs to produce to answer your question. It's going to be able to say things that sound really, really real. Unless you can verify, or there's the AI that you're using. For example, I've been using Copilot a lot more now. I really do like the fact that when I use it, it provides references. Here's the, some of the pages. Here's some of the web pages I use to go find the answer for this thing. That was helpful for me. And then I can read what it said and then go to those pages and kind of verify myself. Do I trust that information? But to your point, Tommy, in the internals of a company, where is that AI generating its data from? Where is it? It needs to be. Whatever you're doing, we have to have AIs that are like referencing the content and saying, oh, I found in this report with these filters, this kind of insight. Oh, interesting. Let me go look that up. Right. Okay, well, that's a kind of a nuanced answer. Not sure that's right. Like, you have, there's going to have to be some more like people in the middle here to kind of figure out how do we know this is right.
And I think a real quick note too here, when we're talking about AI, I think especially from an organization point of view, we're not just talking about ChatGPT or even the independent or individual Copilot. A lot of organizations right now, and I've been able to talk to, they're working on their own Copilot or their own basically AI for the organization. Some of them haven't released it yet. So we're not just seeing AI as in ChatGPT or AI as in something on your local machine or just you and I, Mike, with our individual companies with the Copilot. These are AI that's integrated with the organization. And I think that's important to think about that way of AI as well when we're talking about this conversation.
Yeah. So one of the challenges, I do want to start by talking about that graph, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason why is like, I don't have enough details like why, what question are they asking a bunch of questions to the, you know, surveyees that are like causing that spike, or is it directly like, hey, how do you rate your data culture, you know, and it's just a direct percentage? Because obviously they're coming out of that with a, you know, the report authors basically in the article says, you know, we can think of no other reason for these momentous improvements in culture and confidence, both, right, than the advent and visibility of generative AI. So like the challenge around like looking at a graph like this is that, is it because they're looking forward to what AI can do, or is it a representation of this is my data culture right now, or I have a data-driven organization? Like what, and the reason why this is an interesting point to me related to like, and the counter arguments kind of made in the article is there's, regardless of reality, I think there's certainly a perception shift of where organizations think they're at. And I think Brent does a really good job of breaking that down. But what do you guys, if this is a false perception, if we're going from 20s to 40s in a year, and all of a sudden organizations believe that because they've turned on AI in, you know, certain capacities, that all of the sudden they just skip to the front of the line in terms of data culture and initiatives, what is that going to do for current state objectives? And I think he brings that forward, but like, what are your thoughts around that?
I think it's important to focus on
that's a big question. Yeah.
I'm going to focus on one of the words you said, and I think it's the perception of organizations and people perceiving that they're more data-driven, and rather than the actual, whether it's the fact that organizations are being more data-driven. Those are two very separate conversations.
I think But are they? Because, I think what's fantastic about this article is Brent is pointing parts out of this out, but it's comprised for this dissonance between a cautionary tale.
Yeah, right?
Because the lead of this article is, and I just want to like knock through, is the when talking to chief data officers, like he's using some of the output of an AWS survey around like AWS CDO agenda in 2024. And the main call out points that he has are 70% of CDOs say difficulty in changing organizational behaviors and attitudes was the most frequently mentioned challenge. 59% said their largest problem is absence of data-driven culture, data-driven decision-making. 50% say the lack of data literacy or understanding. And ultimately, the outcome is, you know, saying that the survey and interviews leave little doubt that it is necessary for CDOs and their organizations to flourish. That doesn't paint a fantastic picture of like we're in a great spot with data culture and our people knowing and making data-driven decisions. But we just spiked in the largest we ever have since 2019. Is it all a false flag? Or are we seeing the results of a lot of work that's being done across organizations and we're starting to make the right steps?
This feels like, so initial thought here is, well, two thoughts around this one. So one question you asked earlier, Seth, that we didn't really get an answer to, which I think was a very relevant observation here is, what is the, because of the way this is handling, or because of the way this is being reacted to, what are the potential downfalls of thinking you are in a place of data culture when in reality you are not? Mm-hmm. And I think later on in the article, it talks a little bit around like, you know, there's a question that is given that is more difficult for people to answer. The harder question was, when data says one thing and your manager says another, how do you address the difference using like data to support your reasoning, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a great opportunity to say, you know, a data-driven culture, I think, and again, it also points this out in the article, which I really do agree with, a data culture encourages exploration and collaboration and discussion on difficult things. And I really do think looking at the data should conform your understanding of how the business is running. And we always walk into these situations with a preconceived assumption of what the data is going to tell me. Typically, we have to be open-minded and let the data tell us or explore the data to get to a place where we feel like we can produce an answer that will help us drive for actions that will then provide the desired outcome. So all that to say, to answer your question earlier, what will be the outcome here? I think there's a potential here for having many different teams walk down various different paths, thinking they're doing the right thing, but in reality, they're getting further away from their ultimate goals or missions. So I think potentially what's happening here is if you feel like you have a data culture that's more mature, when you start trying to align to key objectives or key results for your organization, you're trying to drive sales, you potentially could be spending a lot of effort in the wrong direction where it's maybe adding some value, but not the maximum amount of value. And because you're relying on the data and analytics provided to you that isn't supporting an alignment to your main, you know, objectives of the organization. So that would be my answer to that piece.
Yeah.
To me, it starts with the definition of, if you asked all the people that they surveyed, what's your definition of data culture and how does it actually manifest in an organization, I think there's going to get a lot of different answers. I think, Mike, to your point, I think a lot of people, when they say our data culture has gotten better in our ability to work with data, is because, well, I'm more familiar to access the data now, or more comfortable to go to a tool like Power BI and look at my reports. It's not as foreign to me anymore. I can ask, maybe if AI is a big part of that, well, I have the ability and I can ask questions. I have better access and ability to, in a sense, interact and touch and kind of mold my data from a consumer point of view too. That doesn't mean data culture though, and I from an organizational point of view. I think that's where the misperception here is. I can ask questions with my data and I have a better ability to work with my data in different capacities than just Excel. Therefore, we have a better data culture. But I think that's very different from an organization actually having a healthy data culture.
Yeah, but data culture in and of itself is represented by people making data-based decisions, right? It's not necessarily that they know how to build all the tools or build all the reports or do all the analysis themselves. I think it drives deeper into how are people basing their decisions, right? And he drives into those specific areas, which we can towards the end of the article. But I, because of that, right? Like we want to rate, we want people to say, the data is telling me this, this is why I conveyed the information, regardless of a situation. We can dive into those later. But when we talk about data culture, we just did an entire series on Tuesdays about adoption, about, you know, all of the things Power BI and data culture and adopting new technologies, business intelligence tools, and the benefits of that. Of the three pillars, though, people, process, technology, what are we constantly talking about all the time?
Oh, it's definitely the technology.
Oh, for sure, right?
No, it's more the
slash,
people in the process.
Slash S. It's the people.
Yeah. It's the people.
Right? So what is striking out of this is if all the CDOs agree as well, because, you know, there's a glurb in here that I love. Brent's spot on here, I think. He says, each year, respondents have consistently emphasized how culture, people, process issues, people and process, typically in the range of 80 to 90%, represent a far greater challenge to becoming data-driven than technical limitations, which is 10 to 20%. So if I take that information, which resonates with my head, as well as all of the findings of Forbes, what drastic change in how we interacted with people in process in the last year lit up a wildfire across everything? And the answer is, I'm not aware of one.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, I mean, we got Fabric, so that was a good thing.
Did we flip the script and all of a sudden have a tech not... Like, and this is what's striking, right? History repeats itself. Technology, when put in front of people, can't solve all of the problems. That's why you need people in process. Mm-hmm. But amazingly enough, technology becomes buzzwords to people who don't understand it. And they start saying that they have things that they don't because they don't get it. And that puts everybody in the organization, I think, especially CDOs or people that are data-driven, in a really precarious place or just a not comfortable one, because automatically all of the things that you've been working hard and diligently to build for the organization, somebody thinks they just skipped to the front of the line, and they didn't.
The only thing I would possibly argue with is no, there's been no catalyst or major change at organizations is I think every tooling, every platform now has or has had some type of copilot and AI to make it, whether it's Google Analytics or Sailthrough or like Confluent or any tool you can think of has some type of AI feature in it now and has had one. And I think that's including a lot of these analytical tools. Copilot just came out for Power BI, obviously, recently, but everything else that people work in, there's some type of copilot. And I think that's to a lot of organizations, to a lot of people, making them feel more accessible and making them feel like they can talk with their data. So I would say if there's one AI catalyst there, that would be it.
And I'm not suggesting that AI can't get us there.
No.
But how do you, like, the projection, and this is where it's like the chart. Are you confident that you're going to get there? Or are you there? And I think that's the big distinction, because even in our conversations with about Copilot, about emerging AI technologies, Tommy, in your experience, like, do you think data culture and data, like, people leveraged AI tools enough to see this sort of representation? And I think the answer is no.
I agree with that.
Because every time we're talking about our interactions with AI tools and data and things that it's doing for us, there's severe limitations on it. It's if you don't have a data catalog, if you don't have the data sources, if you don't have all the documentation, if you don't have all of the things that are going to feed the AI, what is the AI doing? Nothing. It's just regurgitating things that aren't relevant to your business.
And yes, but I think it's still making it a little easier for people or the perception. Sir,
yeah. I'm not suggesting that it's not super powerful and it's game changing. Yeah. What I'm suggesting is I haven't seen nor experienced something in my line of business or my area and our conversation that would lead me to believe that, yep, 100%, I believe that we're almost at 50% across all organizations and culture trends that everybody just insta-boosted. I think potential is there, but I don't think we have. And it, like, it's still the same base or not base, the same source things that need to be there for any data culture initiative. I need data. I need it consolidated. I need it clearly documented. I need it like my people or the people in the organization to understand where to go, how to access, what tools to use it for. And if AI shortcuts the tools part and they could just ask questions and they get the data and the answers that they need, fantastic. That would be a huge time saver, right? But that also requires, and we talk about it in the future, individuals to understand how to use data. And AI doesn't do that.
100%. Because I think to your point, data culture relies on the dialogue and interaction between people. It's not just enough for my ability to talk with data and my ability to access or manipulate the data. It's my ability in my boss, my team, to change our viewpoints, to go over what our numbers are, to agree on it. And we talked about this in a data literacy episode. It's talking with it, reading it, and arguing with data is a healthy data culture. And by itself, just having that tooling is not enough. Do you have that interaction with your boss? Do you have that interaction with your team on if the numbers were to change? Or to Mike, you always say this, and I think it's so paramount here. If the numbers don't align with my expectations or my viewpoints, am I willing to change my own viewpoint or do I disagree with the data?
And I think a lot of this, to me, where I'm leaning a lot of this point right here is I think a lot of this culture, data culture piece starts with the leaders of your team. It starts at the top. You know, what does that leader tolerate? Where are the objectives coming from? One and note here that Brett makes is there's a the State of Data Culture Maturity Research Report was produced. The link is on the website. I'll put the link in here as well. But if you want to go download that, you can. But inside the report, it communicates a little bit around, okay, well, because of that data culture, 29% of respondents felt very confident that the leadership sees a link between investing in data and analytics and staying ahead of the competition. I would wholeheartedly agreed. We're competing on analytics. Like that is one of the things that early on when I was thinking about building programs and software, like anyone can build a program. Anyone can build an app now. The barrier to building apps is becoming so low cost. Anyone can get one of these things done. Where does your differentiator come from as a company? Well, it comes in how you collect your data. What do you do with that data? What comes back from that? What are you doing to leverage that information in order to be competitive against other people? And I think that is your company's strategic asset. No one else can create your data, period. No one else can make that. So in a place where you can get more of that internal data made around your customers, your customer base, and figuring out what your market looks like, that's very valuable to companies. And I think companies will continue to have to, and this is where I see maybe potentially Fabric playing a big role here, is the data and analytics competition space is heating up. You know, 5 years ago, Power BI did not have any kind of Fabric experience to it. And we were like, wow, look at this. Power BI is great. Seth, you've made the point, I think, in the past. Like, we can join all these data sources. This is awesome. There's nothing going to compete with this. And all of a sudden now we have lakehouses and all this other new stuff. And so we're seeing, you know, the data and AI piece of things become very central to our organization. It's becoming more and more important to organize what we're doing data-wise, because that is our strategic asset moving forward.
And I agree. Like, so one, I'm all in. I agree with Brent in the first parts, right? When we're talking about perception of where people think they are, right, versus yes, where they are, I think there's a clear line in here. I haven't thought about like the articulate question, right? But he has three different questions. Are you data driven? Everybody says yes, right? And then we go into harder. In the past month, have you changed your opinion based on data? Well, like how involved and how engaged are you, et cetera, et cetera. And then the harder one is like when data combats or is at odds with what your manager is saying or thought.
I was mentioning earlier, yeah.
Yeah, like, are you pushing that forward? And I think regardless of your systems, the technology, et cetera, that is something that a company could foster right out of the gate, which is, listen, if we have access to information within our systems and the outputs are telling us something, we want you to tell us what you're finding, right? Like, mm-hmm. there should not be a culture of fear around, like,
yes.
an individual or raising up a potential problem, because you're hiding something. And ultimately, that problem will very rarely just go away. It just becomes a bigger and bigger and bigger problem, to the point where it becomes a much larger challenge for the organization to solve, as opposed to, you know, whatever the euphemism, or like, just, hey, just get it out of the way, rip the Band-Aid off. We'll figure out how to pivot and we'll move forward, versus you just cut my leg off. How do you expect me to run the race? Right. And that's what happens with some of these data problems, where you're just hiding behind, like, you know, somebody's not going to like the message.
And I'm glad you said that, Seth, because I was going to do a hot take, but you basically said it in so many words.
Hot take, but
honestly, I think regardless of the tooling, like, with the people, process, technology for a successful data culture, technology could be the least dependent or least crucial aspect of those to foster one. Because it doesn't matter if you have Power BI or Fabric and you have the greatest data analysts or engineers. Seth, if you have that situation where I can't show these numbers, or we're worried if someone gets fired, or that's not what my boss said, I mean, that immediately kills whatever you've done to get to that number in the first place. And the technology at that point is irrelevant. So from a data culture point of view, be it AI or Power BI, and your enterprise, if people are not willing to accept that above you and not willing to change that perception above you, that immediately is the deal breaker towards any fostering data culture. Technology can't do anything there.
I like your comments here, Tommy. And I'm thinking here, I keep trying to write down a little list of what is the measure of good data culture, right? And I'm from this article and what you guys have been saying, you know, it starts with a good leader. You know, I feel like there's a part of this is we want to foster a culture of explorations and discovery and really leaning into the information. I think you said something really relevant, Seth, there, which was we don't want to have a culture of fear. So I don't want to continue being in a place where I'm looking at data and I'm fearful what the results are, because the results are contrary to what my leadership expects. And therefore, I work hard to shape and conform the data into something that it's not really there. And Tommy, you've been very big on this proponent as well. You know, you've been have experienced a number of instances where the business is so fearful for what they're trying to do, instead of pushing into the analytics and getting the real numbers, people keep trying to filter out some things or do these other things. And so, you know, there's a fear there that is being displayed in how their actions are. So, you know, don't do a culture of fear. One note that I have around that one is sometimes I hear teams bantering or relegating, and this is typically comes from the IT space, where they say, well, that team's just shadow IT, or we don't accept shadow IT here. And to me, that feels like a way of shaming some team into, it really does. I mean, it feels like a way of shaming a team into saying, you can't do it. We, as the central BI or central IT team, has the authority to make all the reports. And if we can't produce it, everything you're doing is irrelevant and not helpful. That is a great killer to data culture. Like, that should not be said. And I get annoyed now when I hear the word, oh, we don't accept, like, when I hear shadow IT,
yeah,
I just feel like that is the wrong impression of how to think about our data culture. That is not right.
It's completely opposite. You say that, and you know what I think?
Yeah.
Like, those are your best friends. Like, these are the people
you want to go engage with shadow IT.
You want to pull them in closer.
Yes.
Because they're so close from, like, they're already doing tons of stuff.
Yeah.
right? They're on Correct. Their own. Great.
They're on their own. They're doing their stuff.
How do you guys make the best? Like, you want to talk big business impacts? Like, get up next to each other. Figure out where the handoffs or how you accelerate like the what they're doing into a wider audience, because yep. it's obviously already working for them.
Yep.
Right. And or like, hey, you find out that there's some inefficiencies or there's some data Help quality them out. Issues.
What? Make them more efficient.
Right.
Why not? Right, dude. And to your point, so your point leads into my next point, which was there needs to be better boundaries and providing trust and responsibility across teams. Yep. If we have a central BI team that's going to make models and we're going to say, we will trust this other team, there has to be a mutual trust. And we have to say, look, you're not shadow IT. I will build this centralized model. Here you go, team. You are now able to build reports off of it. And you have to trust what they're doing. There, if you don't have that trust across teams, again, that's another indication of poor data culture in your organization. Sorry, Tom, I didn't mean to cut you off. I just want to make that last point because I was following along that line of thought.
I think that's a great point because to your point, without trust, what do you have? There's conflict. I've seen this as being a data analyst where now every time you have a meeting with that department or with those group of users, it's almost like a competition or a conflict where we have to have it every time.
A fight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And because, again, all of a sudden you're opening up things that now they're not owning, even though it took them hours and hours or whatever their old process was. And we're now opening up this world of, well, here's your numbers. So here's the data that we're actually getting. And if it doesn't jive or align with, again, their past years, they're not willing to accept where we're moving or where we're heading in terms of how we're going to access our data. And then more importantly, who's going to have visibility to this? Because before everything was controlled, that old way of, I'm going to put stuff in the PowerPoint. We'll have a meeting with my executives. I'll put the numbers there. Done. Well, all of a sudden now with all the tooling and AI, anyone can ask a question and get a number that was previously unavailable to them. Or again, they can just access the report. So we're now, if you want to have the lack of, or if you have lack of trust, you have conflict between the people who are accessing the data and the people who are creating the data.
I don't want to say laughed out loud, but like your tone of how you were saying, like talking to the that business area, I think potentially could be part of the problem sometimes because the subject matter experts in their business area likely have better data sometimes, depending on like if we're talking well-formed, et cetera, as opposed to like the central BI team coming in and saying like, this is where data is. And it's like the problem with that perception is the central teams need to get up next to those shadow IT teams with the mindset that they're wrong. Like central IT is wrong, right? I need to understand what that business is doing and how. And I think as long as the tech stacks are unified, like it's really just a data conversation. I do think that, Mike, while you were talking, like I think there are going to be some challenges there potentially, especially if you have like business units that solve their own problems by solving it with their own technology choices. And the organization is saying, hey, guess what? We're doing this now. That is going to be conflict, right? You're going to have challenges that you're going to have to solve because you have resources that either have to ramp up into new technologies, or you need to find a way to adopt the new solution, right? Like, because that's an organizational change. That's not a one department telling another department that they can't be doing something. And that I think is one of those conflict points where you do have organizations that have just chosen to be the Wild West of solutions and technologies, is you have people that specialize in them. And especially when you have subject matter experts, data experts in business areas that are very proficient at different tool sets, that could be part of the conflict in terms of like shadow IT and they do their own thing, et cetera.
You just hit the nail on the head. And I would love to give a shout out here, but the biggest catalyst I've ever seen at organizations or departments for the change in the shift of behavior and process is the leadership saying, moving forward, we're going to use this platform, or we're going to be using this report. This is where you're going to get your number on moving to quarter two or whatever it was. And if you see an issue, if you see a number, please contact X, Y, and Z. But that came from leadership. Those tectonic shifts on behavior of departments came from the people with influence. And that's
aren't left up to the departments to fight over.
Right. Yeah.
So what are two proven ways that Brent points out to build a data culture?
I think we just talked about the first one.
Well, major leadership, right?
Yeah, leadership.
Yes, I definitely agree with that one. And I read another article recently by, I think it's incinc.com. I think it's like incorporated. And the article was talking a little bit about something that Jeff Bezos has banned PowerPoint from Amazon. I wish all companies would do this. I think this would be a good idea. This would be a good suggestion. So I agree with you, Jeff Bezos, and I think you are a smart man for doing this. But one of the comments in this other article, which was, and I think this is one of the, I'm getting back to what we're talking about here, your question, Seth. You, in the middle of the article, it says you don't want persuasion, you want truth. And so what Jeff Bezos has done in his meetings, or his executive meetings, or some of them anyways, he says, look, people are very busy. They're running from meeting to meeting all day long. And so he starts his meetings now with silence. People come in, and if there's a meeting about a topic, someone writes up a page, a paragraph. It's a written dissertation or written thing of, here's the problem, here's what I've analyzed, and here's how I think we're going to have to solve this. It's like a written document. And so the idea is, a goal here is, we want everyone to read the memo, the piece of the literature, basically, and think. Spend 15 minutes just thinking about what you're doing, what's going on. Give the space to be able to do that. And so, you know, it's PowerPoint tends to feel more like a sales tool. You're putting pretty pictures and you're distracting from some things. And so if you strip all that away and focus on what is the truth we're trying to get after, what does the data tell us? And I think that, to me, again, I would say Amazon is a pretty good beacon for data and analytics. They've literally built an entire business on, like, you know, a distribution company turned data analytics company, and they're huge now for all that kind of stuff. So to me, it feels like a lot of what they have done has worked for them. And so there should be some lessons learned there, where we focus more on, the culture should focus on more, what is the truth we're trying to seek? And giving people ample time to digest that and think through that with the data and reports that we provide to people. I'll pause there.
No, this probably worked too, because Jeff has probably invested his time, not just, we're going to do this. And going back to the article, like, from a leadership point of view, it's not enough just to say, sure, we'll do this and we'll go this direction. It's the investment of leadership with their time, not just their money, on any initiative from a data culture point of view. And I bet Jeff is probably in those calls going, no, 10 more minutes, 5 more minutes. And he's there at the call too, not just sending his own email, then moving forward with whatever he wanted to do. It's that example of leadership and the example of taking that initiative and time spent towards, we're going to actually do these data governance issues. We're going to work on these data literacy workshops, and I will be there. Like, to me, that's the example, because it was more than just saying, we're going to do this, I'll send out an email, good luck on your own. No, that I need to see that example from my leadership and from that sponsor with their time.
I always like to disagree with Mike, and there's a counterpoint in the chat.
Well, I mean,
that does speak to just this, and it's not an argument, right? Is
take the chat.
That works with Jeff Bezos, right? Power BI guy points out that not everybody consumes information the same way. And in general, I'm summarizing his point.
Yeah, that's right? Fine.
So sometimes, like, in the same way that we talk about, like, do people consume things by video or reading or, you know, listening, right? Better. And I agree with Mike from the standpoint that, especially in where I'm, like, now spending my time, you spend an inordinate amount of time on building PowerPoints. And could I spend a fraction of that in a well-summarized, you know, synopsis of why we're talking and what it is we're meeting on, that would take me a fraction of the time and be better than a PowerPoint. Yep, it would be. So are you like, there's a time saver there. There's an efficiency. There's a getting to the point, showing some data, like rather than presenting something and convincing people, right? I do like the idea of the format, whether it works for everybody, I don't know.
And again, the format I think is actually meaningless, honestly. I think the main points here are people need time to think about a particular challenge. You want to bring smart people into a solution and say, yep, what should we be thinking about? That, to me, that is very relevant. And then the other half of this is driving for the understanding of truth. These are two qualities I think that are very valuable in data culture. Have you given yourself space and time to think? And are you understanding truth? And does your leadership allow for that? If your leadership doesn't allow for those things to be happening, I would question, what are we really doing? And are we just trying to produce reports and produce data to make someone happy? Or are we actually going after, where do we go from here? What is the right decisions to kind of be making? And I think that's going to be helpful.
Yeah. I'm actually somebody who would say I 100% agree. I'd love all my meetings to be that way. And maybe I will change them if I run them. because I do.
It doesn't hurt to try. I mean, if nothing else, try it out for a little bit and start with, you know, something that's more reflective maybe in the nature. And maybe that'll work. Again, I don't think it has to be exactly that pattern. That is what they have found that works for them. The way their culture is. But I mean, again, the principle should be, no matter where you are, it should be allow time for thinking and allow finding for truth.
Yeah. And I think, so Brent like finishes up the article with the other aspect of tried and true ways in which to build the data culture is ample resources. And I think I commented on this a lot through the adoption Tuesdays, right? Where it's like, man, we're making an assumption here. Like we got a team now all of a sudden, really, and we're engaging. Oh, if we're engaging with the business, then we have deliverables. We have actions we can provide back to them, all of which require the organization to put their money where their mouth is, right? If you want a data culture and you believe that's the most important thing, that shouldn't be a one-off hack job in every business unit, right? You can't build a data culture by picking one or two things to go attack. It's great that you are. It might improve the area of that business, but it's not doing things holistically. So if you want to say you have a chief data officer and a data culture, you have to take in mind the entirety of the data organization, all of the things required, and how you're going to support the people and process part of that, because the technology implementation is the easiest. We can say we have Power BI, but that doesn't mean people are using it. And I think ultimately, like that is going to be one of the biggest challenges anywhere, is if all of us collectively want to be, have a data culture, want people to be doing data-driven decision-making, you need leadership, you need the guidance, you need to have those things in place. And in part, bringing up all of these other people who don't know how to use data, teaching them, and then amplifying the people that do know how to use data and giving them better and more skills and technologies to create more efficiencies throughout an organization. And I agree with him. I loved the article. I think it nailed all the points, and I think really, you know, shines a light on a potentially not dangerous, but like another area that we deal with that we're going to have to be talking about. Like, it's not Power BI is taking over the world. It's, oh, all of a sudden AI just skipped all of the legwork that still is required for organizations to do.
And I hope that's where we're heading too, because I think we're still at a point with a lot of organizations where there is this incredible lack of established data communities or that data literacy leadership. And again, whether or not you have a CDO, and if you don't, there's still, well, who is actually this role? And I don't think that's really been established yet, but I think that's where we're going. How many organizations have like a community team, right? Who put on those events at the end of the year or put on all the cultural team. And in that same fashion, I think that needs to happen if we really want to see this effective at organizations for data. Again, you may have your COE, You may have the BI team, but that doesn't mean they have the authority or the resources, both from a budget and people point of view, to pass things on and implement changes, right? We're talked about that with the implementation Tuesdays, but that doesn't mean that they're company-wide or that they have the reach that they need. And I think that's not established roles. I think that's a huge part where hopefully that's where we're going to see in the future where, oh, wow, we actually need to invest in roles for data literacy, not just someone's extracurricular activity or they're volunteering for this after hours at work, but really spending and focusing that time on how are we growing data literacy with an established team or person.
I'm my final thought here is I'm going to probably lean on the very end of the article, which I found very relevant. How do two proven ways to build data culture? And I think he does a good job summarizing those kind of two points. It starts with leadership, you know, providing people with the, this is a direction here. And then it ends with the second point, which is, I'm scrolling forward here, providing ample resources, training, time. And so I'll speak for this personally. This is Michael's personal experience. My personal experience around when I found data to be very valuable. I mean, I feel like I have decided at some point in my mechanical engineering degree, I decided data is so important that I will shift my career to over into data. And so if I'm looking at me from a company perspective, right, I want individuals in my company who are pushing for data, trying to learn the new tools, they're getting in, they're learning Power Query, they're taking self-initiatives. I'm potentially sponsoring them a little bit from a company perspective, but I was spending so much time outside of work thinking about doing, investing in learning and educating myself around data. This has pushed me into that career now. So I really do feel like if you harbor a good culture of people who are enjoying what they're doing and they're finding the value and the success with the data in their company, potentially those people will even spend a little extra time above and beyond investing in themselves. So another outcome of this is look at your people. Are they hungry for learning more about better data things? Are they spending extra time above and beyond? Are they asking for more opportunities to learn about these things? That's another, to me, another measure of, does the data culture support encouraging your team to be more data driven, right? Does that help? So I like those things. I think ample resources is a really good one. There's not enough out there. We need to talk more about it. The tools and the technology are always going to be exciting. It's going to be fun, but we need to supplement that with learning and helping our teams, our people, right? We want people who invest in themselves just because they know it's valuable. That to me sounds like it's a good story to tell.
Always. Right.
With that, I really appreciate this conversation. Wow, this was I feel like this is, I don't know if you can quantify that. I feel like this was a thick conversation. I don't know if that's a right term you could hear, but I feel like this was a thick topic. I really liked it. Thought this was really, really good. With that, I hope you enjoyed this conversation as well as we continue talking about the intersection of like AI, Power BI, data, fabric, all that culture related things. As we keep kind of pushing around, what does this mean for us? What does this look like for your organizations? And kind of, you know, pulling from our experiences. We work with a lot of companies. We've had a lot of experience in these places. Hopefully this is helping you think about these topics as well. We really appreciate your time. We thank you so much for listening with us. We enjoy you being here. We love the chat. Chat has been awesome. You've been asking great questions and adding good commentary here. And Seth's always teasing me in the chat, so you can always see that as well. Super fun. And you can always get some good laughs out of it as well. With that, we only ask, please share the podcast with someone else. If you found this valuable, hopefully somebody else will too. Tommy, where else can you find the podcast?
You can find us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Make sure to subscribe and leave a rating. It helps us out a ton. Also, maybe share with 5 other people. If everyone does that, we'll get 5 more people. Do you have a question, idea, or topic that you want us to talk about in a future episode? Head over to powerbitips.com/podcast. Leave your name and a great question. And finally, join us live every Tuesday and Thursday, 7:30 a.m. Central, and join the conversation on all of Power BI Tips' social media channels.
Thank you all very much, and we'll see you next time.